My talk is based on two papers. One is with Vadim Zhernitsky, who used to be at Bell Labs, and now he's at the University of Illinois. And that paper is based is a collaboration with Jiang Qiang at the University of Vermont. And also, I will review a few other papers. And the main problem which I'm going to start with is the problem of the existence of the dispersion managed solitons. And on the way of the existence of a fully localized solution of a certain nonlinear equation, I will show you that there are some obstacles, and these obstacles are related with parametric resonances, and these obstacles naturally appear if you solve initial value problem for this nonlinear evolution equation. So my talks consist of two parts. One is existence, and the other one is a solution of initial value problem. And the main model for my consideration is a so-called dispersion periodic nonlinear Schrödinger equation. That's a standard non-cubic nonlinear Schrödinger equation, but the coefficient in front of the linear dispersive term is a function of the evolution time. From the beginning, I will mention that there are two variables in this problem, T and Z, and Z is the evolution time. So the initial value problem is set at Z equals zero, and it runs up to the final termination time. And T, the role of T is no longer time. The role of T is the pulse duration, pulse localization. So we are looking for a solution of this nonlinear Schrödinger equation in a proper space over real values of T. And the dispersion coefficient is a periodic function of evolution time. The question is whether this nonlinear equation exhibits special solutions, which would be localized over time, over duration of values of t, and which would be follow for the periodic variation of the coefficient d. So if you look at the ODE or linear ODE with periodic coefficient, we would naturally apply the Floquet theorem, and we would look for a quasi-periodic solution with a certain Floquet multiplier of mu, and the envelope of the solution would be a periodic function of the evolution time. The DM soliton solution, dispersion managed solitons, are defined exactly like this. These are solutions which are localized in T, in a certain L2 space, for example, for simplicity, and they would be quasi-periodic function of that. So the main question is whether such solution exists or not, and I will show you that there are obstacles on the existence of such solutions. And the natural context of this problem comes in optical communication. A user on one left on optical communication line sent a sequence of bits. Each bit is approximated by solitons, and on the other end of the communication line, the other user wants to have exactly the same sequence of bits. There should not be any noises. There should not be any distortion of this sequence of bits. And in the middle of the way, engineers use a lot of techniques to preserve the shape of the pulses. One of the techniques they use a dispersion management. So they concatenate two fibers of different properties. One fiber is a focusing fiber. It makes a pulse to be narrow. It contracts the pulse. And the other pulse, the defocusing pulse, makes the pulse broader. So this dispersion compensation compensates the dispersive effect due to propagation of the pulses. And in this system of concatenated two fibers of constant dispersion, it's naturally to introduce few parameters which are important for my consideration. So I will work with that particular nonlinear Schrödinger equation with these particular three parameters into taken into account. One parameter denotes is the mean value of the dispersion coefficient, and if we forget about the variant part of the dispersion, then we know that the values of d naught should be positive to support soliton solutions. Solitons or pulses exist only if d naught is positive, and I will keep this parameter to be positive during my presentation. The other two parameters are important. Epsilon defines the map period, but it also stands in the denominator of the map strength. So if epsilon is small, then the period of map is small, so it's a fast variation of the dispersion coefficient, but also it's a large variation of the dispersion coefficient because there is a factor 1 over epsilon in between. But there is also another factor, another parameter m, which measures the standard variations of the map of the map period and of the map variations. And this parameter can be also used to study analytical solutions of this type of equation. So I'm setting a problem whether there exists a quasi-periodic solution in a proper L2 space in T, and the question is how can I study this type of problem. And it turns out that I can approach to consideration of this problem by playing with some small parameters. I can use epsilon to be small, and then I can define actually a nonlinear bound state in a certain averaging method, or I can work with the small values of m. So the first approximation is a standard approximation in optical communication. People study strong maps with a short period of time, so they consider the pulse duration to be much larger than the standard maps variation, and they actually manage to define the quasi-periodic orbits, which we will call dispersion managed solitons. So my first part will be devoted to the asymptotical limit when parameter epsilon goes to zero, and then naturally we will see what soliton solutions are about. So if epsilon goes to zero, then the dominant term is actually the variant term, but this is a linear term, so it's naturally to treat this term. So I will assume that the variant part has a mean zero, and the average part will be positive. It's divided by two just for normalization purpose. Nothing very special about it. So I know how to treat the linear part, even if the linear part has a periodic coefficient. There is a fundamental operator which translates the initial data to any values of that. In a Fourier transform, it's just a multiplicative operator which introduces the dispersion in the problem. And the antiderivative of the dispersion coefficient, d minus 1, is a periodic function of zeta, where zeta is a fast evolution variable. So with the use of this transformation, I can actually kill the large and fastly variant term. I can actually remove this term from the equation if I will simply do a translation. So from variables u, I will introduce a new canonical variables v and v bar, and I will rewrite the system as a Hamiltonian system, and what is left in the Hamiltonian are only two terms. The first term is autonomous term with a constant average dispersion. The second term is non-autonomous, but this is a non-linear term with a certain with this evolution operator applied to this term. So of course, if I will write it down, then it will involve a certain integrals because of non-local form of this operator. But this type of system, this type of form is advantageous because I can easily develop a systematic method based on near identical canonical transformation to average the periodic dispersion out. So the leading order Hamiltonian, the leading order average Hamiltonian will be simply the average value of this Hamiltonian, and it's given by H naught. So the first term, the linear term, is left without changes, and I'm averaging out the nonlinear term. But actually, I can extend this leading order average Hamiltonian by means of a near identical canonical transformation to higher order of epsilon. So the main question is how close the average Hamiltonian to the Hamiltonian which has fast periodic variations. And that question is treated by means of a theorem which Vadim, Grenier, Jones proved in the paper in the year 2001. This theorem measures the distance between the solution of the original problem with the dispersion variation and the solution of the averaging problem without dispersion variation. So it's a certain, it's natural to employ a Fourier transform to rewrite the problem in a certain compact sense. So the original problem involves a double convolution operator, and the kernel is a function of the fast evolution times zeta. Then the average problem is also involving a kernel, but the kernel is a constant in zeta. And then the theorem tells us that if the initial distance between the initial data in one equation and the initial data in the other equation remains small in the Sobolev space HS minus 2, where S measures the smoothness of the solution of the average problem, then it remains also closed for any values of evolution time zeta in the same Sobolev space. So there is a closeness in this Sobolev space HS minus 2 between the solutions of two equations. So that if we have a fixed point which belongs to this space and it satisfies sufficient fast decay at infinity for the average problem, then it is translated to the quasi-periodic fixed point, quasi-periodic orbit of the original problem. Therefore, that's how we define what is the nonlinear bound state of the dispersion periodic nonlinear Schrödinger equation. We need to find a fixed point of the average problem. And that is also given by another theorem of Vadim. Yes. Yes, the original paper of Vadim Zhernitsky was based on the result of the average dispersion to be positive, but then there was an improvement by Markus Kunze, and he extended the same results for the case d not equal zero. And what we did recently with Vadim, we extended the same results to the next order in epsilon, actually to the first order in epsilon, and showed that the same closeness remains for all later evolution times if it was given at the initial time, but the Sobolev space has to be h to s minus 4. So every time when we go to a high order of perturbation theory, we have to design an appropriate smooth space for the solution of the average problem. But in an idealistic situation, we are thinking about very good exponential decaying solutions, which are C infinity solutions of the average problem. So that is not a problem for us.
Does epsilon not depend upon Z
naught? Yes, that definitely. It has to be a local estimate. So on this. So I was going to talk about another theorem which Vadim proved a little bit earlier. He was studying actually constraint minimization of the average system, and he proved that if we preserve the L2 norm, if we keep the L2 norm fixed, we can actually minimize the average Hamiltonian of the problem. There exists a minimizer in this analytical space, in the Sobolev space H1, so everything is smooth. And this minimizer translates to a quasi-periodic solution of the problem, which is localized on the scale of T, which is periodic on the scale of zeta, and which is quasi-periodic on the scale of Z because of this 4K multiplier. So at the leading order, there exists a solution which looks like I postulated from the very beginning. It is localized in T, and it is quasi-periodic in Z. And that's what we call DM soliton, or non-linear bound state of this periodic problem. The question is whether it persists at the next order of epsilon, at the second, and in high orders of epsilon. And with Vadim, we proved that it persists at the first order of epsilon, and we have a conjecture that it persists in all power orders of epsilon. But still, if we approach the solution of the original problem, that's what's going on. There are resonances which eventually kill the persistence of this solution. So this is a result obtained by numerical simulations, I believe, due to Doran group at Aston University. And in the logarithmical scale, this shows the localization of the pulse is lost. At infinity, there is a radiation tail order of 10 to power minus 6, which shows that the solution in the numerical solution is not exponentially decaying on the scale of T. And the Fourier spectrum of the solution shows a lot of peaks which usually indicate resonances in physics problem. And there were some heuristic results in physical literature based on variational principles, some perturbation theory, and some of the recent results by Bill Katz, which I'm going to talk a little bit about, to show that indeed all these parametric resonances appears beyond all orders in the epsilon expansion of the problem. And in particular, I would like to mention that what Katz and Young studied, they studied on the top of the limit epsilon goes to zero, they studied an additional limit when the extra parameter, the parameter m, was sent to zero. And when it's done, then sine m divided by m is a one, and this double convolution operator in a physical space simply becomes a local cubic nonlinearity. So as a result, oh, and m from the beginning, it was the second crucial parameter I was going to talk about. So epsilon was standing in the denominator, and it was defining the map period, but m was defining the magnitude of the dispersion map.
So both m and epsilon.
And that's the limit which I'm going to talk about based on the paper by Young and Kass. They sent m and epsilon to be order of the same, and epsilon goes to zero. And in this type of setting, what is the main idea is that everything becomes simpler because the averaged integral NLS equation becomes nothing but the local NLS equation with the famous Sage solutions. And this, they show that there are resonances beyond all orders in perturbation series in epsilon. So they studied the inner solution, which looks like the Sage soliton, and all corrections can be found perturbatively. For simplicity, they put mu as a Floquet multiplier parameter to be 1, and this solution is only varied in a Fourier space for Fourier parameter omega order of 1. So u hat is a Fourier transform of u in t. But on the outer scale, they showed that there are resonances in the Fourier space. So the outer scale is defined in a Fourier space by parameter omega scaled. And on this parameter omega order of 1, there is a resonant denominator in the Fourier solution. So something like a peak, which I showed previously. And this is one of these many peaks. So in the limit epsilon goes to zero, all peaks goes to infinity, and the distance between the peaks grows. So that was a motivation to truncate decomposition by the very first pole, by the very first peak. And due to the presence of this peak, they showed that the solution always exhibit radiation tail, and they studied what is the strength of the radiation tail, that constant C radiation, or Stokes constant, which was in a talk of Alex Torbis, and that Stokes constant was computed numerically as a function of parameter m, keeping, of course, the fact that the theory is valid only if m is small, but it was a heuristic paper, so they went beyond of the applicability of this perturbation expansion, and therefore they showed so for some sufficiently large range of values of m, the Stokes constant is not zero, and therefore there is a radiation tail. So this result implies non-existence of truly localized dispersion managed solitons in the original evolution time periodic problem. I would say evolution time because that is our evolution time, which is the distance along the fiber. So so the main question is how we can develop any analysis not based on heuristic consideration of beyond all the theories, but more or less on a systematical ground. And the very first step was done in my paper with Junki Yang, and it was actually based on the idea of a series of paper by Michael, Edward Kier, Peter Miller, and the ideas of parametric resonances which persist in the spectral theory, and to today you have heard a couple of talks on these parametric resonances. So just for the very important piece of information, I would like to mention that if the Schrödinger operator has a single bound state and a positive continuous spectrum, then the perturbation to the Schrödinger operator, which is exponentially decaying in X but periodic in D, shifts this continuous spectrum because we can look at the Fourier images of the continuous spectrum, and the shift goes to the right and to the left. And if the dispersion periodic coefficient has all Fourier components present, then there are unlimitedly shifts to the left on the multiple of 2 pi and to the right on the multiple of 2 pi. So there is always a Fourier parameter, there is always a member of a Fourier series which induce a coupling between the eigenvalue and the bound state, parametric resonances, and a shift of the eigenvalue in as a resonant pulse. So as a result, the linear bound state will be always decaying, and the Fermi-Golden rule would defy the exponential rate of the decay of the bound state. And in this linear system, it is easier to work with because we can use a spectral decomposition, and we can decompose the discrete spectrum from the continuous spectrum, and the bounds which you heard how to develop with. But I would like to exploit this idea and to apply it to the original nonlinear problem. And before I can do it on the level of analysis, I would like to confirm that the idea works. And that's why we did some numerical computation for the original dispersion periodic nonlinear Schrödinger equation. We started from a nonlinear bound state, and we exploit the limit when epsilon was just normalized by 1, and we exploit the limit when the map variations were small. So we exploited an opposite asymptotical limit, m goes to 0, when we actually can neglect the periodic part, and then the bound state of this analytic equation is just the Sage soliton. And we would like to understand how the Sage soliton, the nonlinear bound state, behaves in the initial value problem related with non-zero dispersion periodic term. And and the picture shows what we see. So the initial amplitude was square root of 2, and then the amplitude becomes a periodic function, but not exactly periodic because the mean value decays. And if we plot the mean value as a function of time, then we can see that a certain decay is a monotonic decay, and it's quite systematic decay, so it's not a very complicated function after averaging over the period. So we would like to approximate this type of behavior for the original nonlinear problem with a certain asymptotical or rigorous analysis. And if you look at the spectrum, if you look at the time location after sufficiently many periods of oscillations, 2000, then we will see the radiation tails, but they are quite simple, and we will see in the Fourier spectrum a single peak. So in the limit M, in this particular limit, there are just one symmetrically located parametric resonances, and we would like to understand better how to describe the decay of the nonlinear bound state due to this parametric resonance. So what we work with, the limit M goes to zero, and in this limit, the main approximation for the bound state is just the Sage soliton, and the main problem is the integrable NLS equation with cubic nonlinearity, and I'd like to refer also to the talk of Peter, who says that integrable systems are very important in terms of development of perturbation series for non-integrable systems, because in integrable systems, we know everything about the spectrum of the linearization operator on the nonlinear bound state on the Sage soliton. And in this spectrum, we know that there are two symmetrically located branches of the continuous spectrum with zero resonance at the end point, and there is a zero eigenvalue of algebraical multiplicity 4 and geometrical multiplicity 2. So effectively, based on this understanding of linearization of the NLS bound state, we can make an effective spectral decomposition of the zero eigenvalues are translated in a change of parameter of a solitary wave solution of a nonlinear bound state, and the continuous spectrum enters to the dispersive part, to the remainder term of this decomposition. So based on this understanding, we are looking for a certain asymptotical multiscale solution of the original problem. And in this asymptotical multiscale solution, we are using parameter mu as a variant parameter. Parameter mu stands for this translation along the orbit of a nonlinear bound state. Nonlinear bound state have a free parameter mu. So in initial value problem, the solution can be translated along this central manifold. And in the leading order of my decomposition, I'm using this nonlinear bound state, treating the rest of the asymptotical series to be decomposed through the eigenfunction of the continuous spectrum, through the dispersive remainder. And but at this time, I would like to present the results at the first few orders of asymptotic expansion to show a computation of a so-called non-linear Fermi golden rule, and to see, to show you some interesting properties of the non-linear Fourier golden rule. And one of the ideas of this week's work was to understand how we can do this type of problem with the use of the rigorous analysis, rigorous non-linear analysis of the problem. So the program, the program for the rest of my talk is the following. I'm going to compute the first two corrections to the asymptotical multiscale to the nonlinear bound state, and I will see the obstacles on the continuation of the perturbation series. And in order to treat, in order to continue perturbation series expansion, I will have to define the rate of change of the parameter of a nonlinear bound state mu, and the corrections of this series for mu dot would be called as a nonlinear Fermi golden rule, and these corrections naturally appear from a continuation of perturbation series expansion. So just to not to put too many details, I will mention that at the order of at the first order in terms of parameter m, I have a very simple system. I have just the linearized analysis equation, which I know everything, the linearized at the bound state, and I have the right-hand side. And the right-hand side is decaying in t exponentially, and it's periodic in z. So it's a certain forcing term which is decaying in t and periodic in z. So with this in mind, I can expand the solution of this linear non-homogeneous problem in a Fourier series. Every term of the Fourier series solves a certain non-homogeneous equation with a decaying, with a localized source. So if the operator standing on the left can be inverted, I can always find a solution, a decaying solution of the problem. But if there are parametric resonances present in the problem, then I can simply invert the operator standing on the left hand side. And that shows that the decaying, the exponentially localized solution, right-hand side, generates the non-decaying term at the first order of epsilon. And skipping probably the main of the results, I simply mentioned that this non-decaying behavior appears to be in the resonant denominators in a Fourier transform, where the Fourier transform is supposed to be a generalized Fourier transform out of the eigenfunction of the continuous spectrum for a linearized analysis equation. So what you see here is a very rough approximation of what we actually did in our paper. And with a lot of computation, we studied by means of stationary phase method the limit when z and t goes to infinity, and we showed that indeed there are non-decaying corrections in terms of the duration parameter t, in terms of localization parameter t. So it's a non-decaying correction, and they satisfy a certain Sommerfeld radiation boundary condition because the initial data was localized in t, and when we switch that greater than zero, that initial data generate radiation tail which diverges from the curve of the solution. So it satisfies Sommerfeld radiation boundary condition, and that is the main result of the first order of the perturbation series expansion. And here I don't have any obstacles. So the solution, globally the solution is bounded, but non-decaying, but it does not grow at infinity. What's happening in the next order is much more crucial. At the next, that was my original transparency. So at the next order, I can also find a solution. I can also look for a solution in terms of this Fourier series transform, but the mean term of this Fourier series transform is no longer zero, and it satisfies also the linear non-homogeneous problem where the operator on the left has a non-empty kernel that corresponds to the zero eigenvalue here. So as a result, even if the right-hand side was exponentially decaying, I cannot invert this operator. The correction will be exponentially growing. I can only invert this operator by means of Fredholm alternative if the right-hand side will be orthogonal to the eigenfunction of the joint problem. And from this orthogonality condition, I can define uniquely this non-linear Fermi golden rule. And that's what I do by means of some computation. I can find the non-linear Fermi golden rule and compute it through the asymptotical behavior of the solution at infinity. As a result, we have a closed form expression for the non-linear Fermi golden rule, where parameter Kn is related with the parameter mu by means of a square root of 1 over mu minus 1 formula. I will show you later. So the main conclusion coming out of these two orders of perturbation series expansion is the following. The correction terms are all bounded in T, but non-decaying in T because of parametric resonances. And therefore, the question is how to prove, how to find estimates on the high order terms of this perturbation series expansion. As I mentioned, this remains an open problem. And in the end, I guess I have 5 minutes. In the end, I will, maybe even more than 5 minutes, right? Oh, I have plenty of time. Okay, so in the end, I would like simply to exploit a little bit this Fermi golden rule to show some particular features which come if we take into account all members of this Fourier series for dispersion coefficient. So I'm not going to use just an approximation of the dispersion coefficient by a single cosine or a single trigonometric polynomial. I have to work with the Fourier series for the step function, for the piecewise continuous function. That's what I have to do. And therefore, all terms of the Fourier series are included in this computation. And if we use the symmetry, then the even terms will go out. But the odd terms are all included up to infinity. So we can study this type of parametric resonances and global. Therefore, closing down the system, so I kill all remainders by simply crossing them out, I cut the system at the leading order at the normal form equation, at the equation which shows how the nonlinear bound state decays with evolution time. What is the rate of change for parameter mu? Parameter mu is proportional to the amplitude of a nonlinear bound state. The right-hand side is given now explicitly, so this is explicitly parameter Kn. And we can see that when mu, which is a parameter of the bound state, becomes multiple of 2 pi, then I have 1 over 0 denominator, and therefore my right-hand side blows up. On the other hand, I always have the right-hand side to be negative. That's why Fermi-Golden rule is a good terminology here. Because of the radiation boundary condition, there is actual dissipation, effective dissipation of the nonlinear bound state. So if I simply plot this decay rate versus function of mu, I will have some interesting critical S when the decay rate goes to infinity. What is the origin of this singularity behavior? It can be simply explained by means of this picture. When we change parameter mu, we change the location of this eigenvalue with respect to the continuous spectrum. And as a result, when the eigenvalue actually approaches to the zero, we will come through the zero resonance point, through the endpoints of one of the branches of the continuous spectrum in a Fourier images. Once it happens, when we touch this endpoint of the continuous spectrum, we have this type of a singularity of the Fermi golden rule. So the question is how well this leading order ODE approximate the solution of the problem. Because we have a full numerical computation of the problem, we can compare the results of analysis and the result of numerical computation. So I will show a little bit the results then, which are made in the limit when mu is small. Then I will show what's happening at the critical level. And maybe briefly I will mention the result when mu goes to infinity. That's a non-linear Fermi golden rule. So the nonlinear bound states are no longer exponentially decaying. The decay rate is actually dependent where we are and what is the Fermi golden rule. So in the limit when mu goes to zero, it's easy to see then Kn are all large, and therefore the set square root of kn becomes exponentially small function in terms of parameter mu. So we can cut this series by the leading order term because they are all exponentially small, and the next order are exponentially smaller with respect to the first order corrections. So we can cut this series at the leading order term. And that will be exactly the result of Biyun-Ulloh order asymptotics, which was given on a different level of arguments by Katz and Young. And with this solution, with this equation, we can find an asymptotical solution to the inverse of a power of a logarithmic function. And we can plot this analytical asymptotical solution on the top of my original numerical computation. So the analytical results given in two approximation by crosses and by open circles fit almost identically to the numerical picture. So it's in fact a very good approximation, and indeed we started with quite moderate, quite small values of mu. The values of mu were to the left of the first critical point. The first critical point is mu equals 2 pi, so it's around 6. And our results were started here, and we have a natural decay of the bound state down to zero. And of course, we don't have a global picture. We don't understand what's happening in the limit that evolution time z goes to infinity. These are all open problems. What we know is that it's going to be initial decay, which is going to be not exponential, but inverse logarithmical. Quite interesting asymptotical result. So now a little bit about what happening if the initial values of mu was above this first critical layer or any other critical level, and what's happening if we the bound state decays and we pass, we cross through this critical point. So that is given by another asymptotical solution of the problem. Suppose we consider a critical level mu n before the critical resonance, when we only start to decay and we approach to this critical resonance, the solution is quite good. The first derivative is continuous function, so it's just Taylor series expansion with the coefficient can be computed. But after the critical resonance, that is after the critical value where a new branch of the continuous spectrum comes into play and touches the parametric resonance, we have a discontinuity of the first derivative of the parameter mu, and a very interesting behavior over 2/3. And therefore, we have a discontinuity in the slope of the solution. So let's see how this discontinuity in the slope of the solution appears to be in numerical picture. The analytical solution is shown by a dotted line, and that is the point when the mean value of the soliton amplitude reaches the critical level. Soliton amplitude is square root of parameter mu. So that is the value when the mean value reaches. But the minimal value, because soliton amplitude oscillates, reaches much faster. As a result, we have a breakdown in this solution much earlier than it's predicted theoretically. But after the breakdown point, if we take the average value of the oscillation, they still resemble the discontinuity of the slope. So of course, the asymptotical theory breaks down around these values of z, but still it resembles the main feature of the asymptotical analysis and of the analytical solution. And before this breakdown, the solution was quite regular, with quite regular peaks in the spectrum. Notice that now we have several peaks in the spectrum, several parametric resonances. But after the breakdown, the radiation field is quite large. The solution, the Fourier spectrum also shows a lot of mass, and therefore it's probably hopeless to expect an analytical solution at these values of z, at these large values of the evolution time. But at least before this picture, we can expect that we can find a rigorous solution of the problem. And finally, in the limit when we have very many critical levels, we can use a sort of Riemann sum approximation on the right-hand side and a comparison principle to show that in this limit, the decay rate is still exponential. So it's like a linear limit in a Schrödinger equation. And we have very many critical levels of the values of mu, so very many breakdowns on the middle of the way, but over the average, the solution, the analytical solution shows quite good average approximation to the numerical solution. So I would like to finish with the point that a proper solution of this interesting problem is still ahead, and we expect that if not in the limit epsilon goes to zero when we have to deal with beyond all order effects, but at least in the limit m goes to zero, we can expect to see a rigorous analysis of the bound terms.